The Agenda with Steve Paikin is presented by CVRD Inco. Together, we are better.
And joining us now is Dave Clegg, the new president of ETFO, the Elementary Teachers Federation of Ontario. Welcome to TVO.
Glad to be here.
It's good to have you here. Okay, top of your agenda, you're brand new in the job. What?
Closing the gap in the funding differential between elementary and secondary students.
Why is there a gap?
Well, it's been there for a long time. It's a historical anomaly in some respects. Certainly has no place in 2007.
The gap by which you mean the province funds secondary students more than they fund elementary students?
Absolutely.
How much more?
It's a $711 difference per student per year. That's a Ministry of Education audited number. And it represents about $900 million in differential in funding.
Has it gotten worse over the years?
No, it's actually over the last 4 years it's gotten better. It's improved by about 40%. The primary cap that was introduced by the Liberal government certainly helped. Specialist teachers that they reintroduced at the elementary level have also helped.
Common sense question here, but is it more expensive to educate a secondary school student than an elementary school student?
Not from our perspective. In fact, all the studies indicate that investment at the primary and elementary level really has the best return on the dollars, and certainly the studies that have demonstrated that are pretty conclusive.
Okay, it's interesting. I asked you the question, you said not from our perspective, which is not a no. So it means there's some open-to-interpretation numbers here?
Well, if you look at the funding formula, it has so many different envelopes for different things. From our perspective, you take the overall aggregate, and quite clearly there's $900 million that isn't going in resources to the elementary level. And from our teachers' perspective, it means that they don't have, for example, teacher librarians in every school, programs that were limited in the 1990s, like shop classes, technology classes that we think would do an awful lot to support the initiatives to success at 18, aren't there. We need the resources. We need smaller junior and intermediate classes.
This is a big deal.
It's a very big deal to elementary teachers when they understand what they're being asked to do and realize how very much less they have to do it with.
Their classes are bigger as well, right?
The junior and intermediate level, absolutely.
How many more kids per class on average in the elementary panel versus the secondary panel?
Well, at the junior intermediate level, we're funded at 25-1, but the classes tend to be bigger than that for a number of reasons. And it really asks an awful lot of teachers in a very diverse society with students with very diverse needs to teach to larger classes. I think the public intuitively knows that, and that's why they've been so supportive of the primary cap.
Now, Dave, let me ask a bit of a smart-ass political question here, okay? The Premier and his government have been very good to you guys, to teachers, to public education over the last 4 years. Are you really going to give them grief over this kind of thing?
Well, we've had long discussions with them, and we think that there's some synergies in terms of our position and what they project for the future. And we think that there's some real opportunities there. Certainly, their platform in the last provincial election spoke to some of our issues. They committed $150 million in that platform to address the junior intermediate class size issue.
All right, let's move on to a bit of a broader discussion here. We have had, over the last 4 years, I think it's safe to say, relatively speaking, more labor peace between the government and teachers than in a very long time, decades to be sure. Teachers have made more money. There has been more peace in the system. Question is it a better education system as a result of all of that?
Well, I think absolutely from the teacher's perspective. I mean, there's a night and day difference when it comes to the morale in the classroom in the last 4 years. Teachers understood that there was a government in place who looked to reinvigorate public education. From our standpoint, having the opportunity to discuss the real issues and look for real solutions has been a night and day difference.
But you say from teachers' perspective it's better. Does that mean it's better for teachers or that it's better for parents and students?
Ultimately, it's better for parents, students, and teachers. Morale in the classroom, the issues of having access to resources, all of those things create a climate that's better for learning. And I can say that as a parent as well as an educator.
Okay, so for all of the extra money, hundreds of millions of dollars that the Ontario Liberal government has put into public education, what have teachers, parents, students, people affiliated with the system got back as a result of their increased investment?
Well, I think they've got a program that has more of the assets that it had in the 90s. I think they have an opportunity at the elementary level in particular to have the programs that were taken away put back in place. We teach the whole child. It's not just about math and reading. We understand the arts are important, and this is a government that's recognized that in some of their funding. They put in place the things that give a rounded education, and I think they understand that a school is the hub of a community, and that's also been important.
If the Ontario public education system were to be measured, let's keep standardized testing out of this for a second, but let's say zero is everybody's failing, the teachers are all unhappy, it's going to hell in a handcart. 10 is utopia. Where is it right now?
Well, from an elementary teacher's perspective, I think we're probably 7, 7.5. I think we understand that we're heading in the right direction. And I think we understand that when we can work with government, we find solutions that are good for the future of this province and good for the kids in the class.
Seven and a half is that's more than a passing grade. That's pretty good.
That's a B.
It's a B. If you think the system is a B, why are there still so many parents who think it's closer to a C or a D or in some cases an F?
Well, I think part of it is the hangover from the previous government's experience. When you're vilified in the public, when you're seen only in terms of confrontation that's been forced upon you, I think that that has a lasting impression in parents' minds. But I think that if people are in the schools, they see what's going on, I think that that dissipates.
So the Education Quality Assurance Office does these tests now. Do you think these tests, and of course the scores are going in what the government would tell us is the right direction, they think the scores are going up, and I guess the question I want to ask is whether you believe that these are an accurate gauge of what's actually happening in the classroom.
We've never felt that. They're a snapshot at best. They look at certain subjects at a certain time in the year. It doesn't look at the whole curriculum. It certainly doesn't look at the whole child. We've always believed that there's been an inordinate amount of time and resources placed upon those tests. And the way in which they're interpreted, we think, is unfair to the whole system.
You know what? Your earpiece just came out, so just flip it behind you. Sorry, just flip it behind you and we'll fix it later. If it's not measuring the system as well as it could be, is there a better way to measure the system which would indicate that, in fact, progress is being made?
Well, I think any way of measuring the system must look at all of what goes on in a school. And there are some suggestions out there how to do that. I think if you're going to use EQAO, we've always said that if it has to happen, it should be random sampling. It shouldn't be every student every year. And there needs to be less time devoted to it. I mean, the school year is quite tight in terms of trying to deliver a curriculum now, and EQAO is only a major distraction from that time commitment.
Let me ask a question that every teacher union leader that I have ever asked this question of hates to answer, but I'm sorry, I'm going to ask it anyway. What percentage of your members in the Elementary Teachers Federation of Ontario ought not to be in the classroom anymore?
I don't know what the number is, and I wouldn't even speculate. But I would say, like all other professions, we certainly recognize there are people that get into the teaching profession who shouldn't be there. And from a federation's perspective, our job is to ensure that each and every member gets full due process under the law. And we do that. But we also, and I've done it as a local president, we've counseled people out of the profession.
You have counseled people out?
I've counseled people out on a number of occasions.
When you think time has passed them by, you tell them so?
Well, when you're in a situation where the person has had an opportunity to try and rectify the issues, they haven't been able to for whatever reason, I've had that talk with people, absolutely.
And how has it been received in your experience?
It's a tough talk to have, but people have responded, and we do that on a regular basis.
Do you think it should be easier to remove teachers for whom the job is no longer the labor of love it once was?
I think that teaching is a very difficult job. Society changes quite quickly. I think that there's an obligation on the part of employers to help people who are going through those transitions. And we make sure that employers do that. And when that's been exhausted, as I said, then there are opportunities for people to look to other places.
Because I think we get the fact that your union and your job is obviously to stand up for your members. Obviously, the trouble is there are, you know, parents whose kids are being affected by these teachers. So where does the preponderance of responsibility lie for you?
Preponderance is to make sure the due process is followed and to be in there to support our members, to ensure that they understand the issues that are being brought to their attention, and make sure that their employer is doing their part too. Because quite often the employer, from our perspective, has allowed things to transpire that they shouldn't have. They have an obligation to help, and quite often we don't think that they do their job.
Okay, let's finish off in our last few minutes here with some talk about the government. You've been working with the Ontario Liberals for the last 4 years. They've been the government. You get them for another 4 years. I don't know how much of a student of history you are, but can you gauge how the last 4 years would stack up in your view in terms of progress in education in this province versus the past?
Well, I started at the outset of the social contract. So the first 10 years of my career were social contract, followed by Mike Harris.
The NDP in
then,
early
then the
1990s.
Certainly, I've referred to it as the dark ages in public education in this province. It was regressive. A lot of people that I started teaching with left the profession quite early. A lot of people that had spent their lives in education left quite disillusioned and wondering what it had all been about. The last 4 years hasn't been perfect. But as I said at the outset, there's been an opportunity to have real dialogues, bring our perspective to bear, and to see changes that bring about solutions that are good for everybody. That was what was missing, at least in the 90s for me.
You've already told us you don't like what they're doing on the funding gap as it relates to elementary versus secondary. What do you think they've made the most progress on?
I think they made the most progress in creating a climate where all of the stakeholders feel that their voices are being heard. That didn't happen. I mean, I tell the story when Liberals were elected in 2003. We invited Minister Kennedy and some of his colleagues to have
breakfast.
Gerard Kennedy. And we're located, our head office is located about a 7-minute walk from Queen's Park. And I said to him, we made a strategic choice to locate there, but we might as well have been on the dark side of the moon for the first 6 years, because there was absolutely no dialogue. The only time we were called is to be told what the next bad thing was going to be.
How do you get on with Kathleen Wynne, the current minister?
We get along quite well. She is certainly somebody well-grounded in education, incredible energy, incredible vision, and she allows us to have disagreements and healthy disagreements when it's necessary.
We are about to embark on a debate on the other side of the studio about having more men in the classroom, more male teachers in the classroom. And this seems like, just before we head over there, an appropriate question for you. You are the first male head of EDFO?
I'm the first male head of EDFO. I was the first male first vice president of EDFO as well.
How long has EDFO been around?
It's our 10th year.
10th year, and you're the first male president.
Mm-hmm.
Are you different than your previous female? I mean, in more than just the obvious way, but is there any difference in having a male head versus a female head?
I don't think there should be. I mean, my own personal history may be a little bit different than my predecessors, both of whom were principals. I haven't been a principal. I'm coming from the classroom. I'm coming from a generation, as I said, that grew up in a very dark period in public education. So I have that perspective to bring, and I think it's one that people are supporting.
What classroom are you from?
York Region. I taught grades 7 and 8, mostly in York Region. My own children, Jacqueline and Nathan, are up in school there right now.
And your plan, when you have this job for what, 2 years?
2-year term.
And then what happens?
I hope to be reelected because I did a good job.
Ah, okay. So it's not necessarily right back to the classroom after this.
Eventually it will be. When this runs out, that's where Teachers Federation leaders go.
They don't. What's the expression?
They don't fade away.
No. Okay. All right, Dave. Thank you for getting the table set with this discussion. We're going to go talk about more testosterone in the classroom on the other side of the studio. So join me if you would.